Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Thames Fowler, registration number 15983. I appear on behalf of plaintiff appellant Annabel J. Cox. I'll briefly touch on several facts and then proceed quickly into the argument. I would like to reserve approximately 5 to 7 minutes of my time, if possible. The record's rather clear in several very fundamental respects. First of all, there's no question that Mr. Loper was insured through American Family. Mr. Loper's car was a described vehicle, and he possessed $100,000, $300,000 in liability coverage. His car was also insured for $100,000, $300,000 in uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage. There's no question that Ms. J. Cox was a permissive occupant, a lawful occupant of Mr. Loper's vehicle. That's clear from, and as an occupant, she is an additional insured based on the terms of the American Family policy. That's located at record page 121. That's a portion of the policy appended to the insurer's motion. So there's no question she was occupying the vehicle and isn't insured. The question comes up as to how the amendments in 2008 interplay with the terms of this particular policy.
Counsel, let me stop you right there. Not only that, but how they interplay with the Supreme Court's Terra Nova decision, right? Was that statutorily overruled explicitly? And if not, was it overruled implicitly? And could you explain how?
Certainly, Your Honor. The General Assembly, when it amended Section 10-4-609, did not explicitly address Terra Nova. However, the General Assembly made clear, both in the plain text and the operational amendments to the UM-UIM scheme, that Terra Nova is clearly no longer in play as precedence for the UIM question presented here. The text is clear. The operational changes to the system of underinsured motorist coverage is clear. The legislature used very specific words. They made, frankly, huge modifications to the UIM system.
And when the General Assembly wants to statutorily overrule a Colorado Supreme Court decision, don't they normally just say that's what we're doing?
Well, on a rare occasion they do, and they focus on it. But the legislature does not overrule or reverse a Colorado Supreme Court decision. They can change the legislation and make the sausage they want to, but rarely, and it's not their burden to go through and try to address what holdings might be implicated by particular legislation, what may remain as valid Supreme Court precedent or not. Frankly, the legislature is free to decide and has for years controlled and managed motor vehicle insurance at several levels, including mandatory liability coverage and the evolving, truly the evolving process and terms and conditions for uninsured motorist coverage. And let me comment that the changes in 2008 are they're global, they're really of continental proportion. I mean, and what's really relevant here is the change that happened in 2008 did away with the notion that liability coverage somehow has an interplay, an offset, or is part of the definition of what constitutes an underinsured motor vehicle. The legislature couldn't have been more clear by making the modifications to Section 609, subpart C, or 4 rather, 4, that said the difference, the differential in the definition of an underinsured motor vehicle, that it's underinsured if the liability coverage is less than the UIM coverage. Only then would it be an underinsured motor vehicle. The legislature struck that language and also added other provisions, and those being the mandated stacking for UIM coverage now is true coverage. Let me give a little bit of an example. And can I put it in a broader context, Your Honor?
Yes, absolutely. And the reason that I'm asking you this question, and whether it's nullified or overruled, is somewhat, from our standpoint, semantics. we have to follow a Supreme Court decision until it's clear to us that it's, that it's been changed by the legislature. That's the reason that I'm asking you.
Certainly, Your Honor. And rightfully so. You're sandwiched between deference to the facts in the trial court, Supreme Court precedent, and what the General Assembly also says. But the General Assembly has worked on insurance, automobile insurance coverage for very hard for the last 4 years, roughly, and there's three huge changes. One is the amendments in Section 608. Okay, and my analogy to that is the thrust of that legislation made you uninsured motorist coverage, UIM coverage, really true, meaningful, and substantive coverage. It's no longer this hollow coverage where there was the offset for the liability coverage, where you could have $100,000 in liability coverage for the tortfeasor driver, and if I had $100,000 in underinsured motorist coverage on my vehicle, the liability offset the UIM, so I effectively had zero UIM coverage. That was the state of the law until January 1, 2008. That offset is based on the existence, that was the part of the definition of an underinsured motor vehicle. It operated to void that coverage, or zero it out, or negate it, or whatever you want to say. But that's why the legislature acted. It was essentially hollow coverage. You could have $100,000 in UIM coverage, and you'd see no coverage come the loss, because the tortfeasor had $100,000. The General Assembly revamped that system. That's a huge change. Now, UIM coverage is true coverage. It sits on top and operates as long as there is a loss greater than any liability coverage that's available. UIM coverage effectively sits on top or insures the innocent victim for additional losses over the liability coverage. That's the most fundamental change. And the reason it implicates Terra Nova is because that change did away with the prior definition in 609 subpart 4 that had the definition of an underinsured motor vehicle, including this liability offset. That created effectively sham coverage. The General Assembly said, no, we want UIM coverage to be real. And it did it for several reasons. First of all, consumers think they have UIM coverage when they really didn't because of the offset. That made common sense from a consumer standpoint. It also makes sense from the beneficial aspects of UIM to protect the motoring public, is that it's real coverage now, and it sits on top of any liability coverage, irrespective of where it comes from. There's no differentiation in the legislation now between based on liability coverage. And the other thing is, the other language in the modifications and the addition of subparagraph C to Section 609 is that it is in addition to any liability coverage. There's affirmative language that it's in addition. That's very active, positive, affirming language that UIM must operate in addition to any liability coverage. Doesn't specify, there's no exception for the nature or source of that liability coverage. It doesn't matter what vehicle it comes from, but that's clear from the plain text and the operation.
But Mr. Fowler, let me interrupt you for a moment. Excuse me. I just want to ask this. Despite those changes, or notwithstanding those changes that you're discussing in the statute, it doesn't appear that there's anything in the statute now that came along with the 2008 amendments that provides that an insurer cannot include in its policy an exclusionary provision such as the one in question here.
The insured motor vehicle exclusion. Well, you know, I would respectfully dissent or disagree with you in that the definition of an underinsured motor vehicle included that offset for liability coverage. That definition was changed, so there's no offset. So they've changed. If you read the definition for underinsured motor vehicle now, you read the section in 609 subpart C that says it's any motor vehicle that is insured for its use, operation, and maintenance. Uninsured motorist coverage applies to insured vehicles. Okay? Does that make sense? The definition that was based on the offset for liability coverage is gone. Therefore, the definition of the underinsured motor vehicle is any vehicle, even if it's insured, and it's insured for the use, okay? Ms. Jacox was using the subject vehicle, and there's no question about that. The case law is clear, and the policy itself covers persons, occupants using the vehicle. They've already crossed the bridge to cover passengers, Your Honor. There's no way to deny coverage to Ms. Jacox and give effect to the plain language of the statute or the operative terms. Okay, the other two big things to keep in mind is the legislature also passed the make whole doctrine, adopted that to protect the insurance, and also Section 10-3-111-1560, first party coverage benefits are protected, and UM coverage is first party coverage. So the legislature stepped up to make UM coverage significant, substantive, and operative in all contexts. And it's backed up by Section 10-3-115-116, first party. You pay on time and reasonably, or there's attorney's fees and multiple award for the issue benefits of the policy that were not paid. So it's that global perspective we're looking at. Did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you. I was just going to remind you.
Yeah, I'm very short on time. I'd like to reserve the balance.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm David Geislinger, Attorney Registration 15008. I'm going to try to respond to some of the issues that were raised by you in appellant's oral argument and before I begin my argument. But I think I'm going to summarize the position this way, is that the problem with Ms. Jacox's argument is they're putting the cart before the horse in this case. They're confusing an exclusion with a setoff, and they're assuming that the exclusion is not operative in the first place. Therefore, they say it is inappropriate to, by the statute, to allow this to be set off in the second place. What the Supreme Court recognized in Terra Nova is that the exclusion is valid. Therefore, there is no UIM coverage to begin with. And since there is no UIM coverage to begin with, then you don't even get to the question of the application of the amendment because there is no coverage. And one of the things that I've asked in my brief is I'm not aware of any authority that says an insurer has to offer this duplicative on top of the liability coverage and UIM coverage to the passenger. In fact, Mr. Fowler talked about this global approach to an amendment of the UM-UIM system. And if we think about that for a second, the argument just doesn't flow. Because globally now, assuming there is this implicit rejection of Terra Nova, what the Colorado legislature has done is where a driver chooses to purchase UIM coverage, not that he or she has to, but where they do that, all of a sudden the passenger has more insurance proceeds than she would have if this was a two-car accident. If in fact this is a global amendment, you have to ask yourselves the question, why is the legislature, in a sense, rewriting the contractual policy to make the UIM a second tier of liability coverage for the driver? And I just don't think that makes a whole lot of sense. Mr. Fowler says that implicitly the legislative amendment makes it clear that they want to do away with Terra Nova, but I would point out that the vast majority of courts that are all discussed in my brief have looked at similar sorts of issues and said, you know what, this isn't legislatively clear. And that's why I spent a whole lot of time arguing on the issues of statutory construction, because I said they have to manifest this. The legislature and the General Assembly has to make it manifest that we're not going to just do away with the anti-stacking provision where UIM actually exists, but we are overruling this long-held
consistent with public policy, exclusion of UIM coverage where the driver's liability coverage is implicated. For those reasons, I think it's very clear it is the legislature's burden to tell courts and to tell lawyers and to tell consumers that long-held case law that upholds an exclusion does not apply any longer. They did not do that in this case. In fact, we're talking about apples and oranges. We're talking about exclusions versus set-offs. And there's no manifest intent to do away with the right to write exclusions. There's absolutely no intent to allow injured passengers in single car accidents access to more insurance than persons injured in a one car accident, in a multi-car accident.
Can you give us an example of what you're talking about as far as the named insured, like not the named insured, but additional insured, like Ms. Jaycox, receiving more in a one-car accident than a two-car?
If she was a passenger in your typical rear-end accident with Mr. Jaycox, with Mr. Loper, Mr. Loper's personal liability insurance would be $100,000. His own personal liability would be whatever it is, but Ms. Jaycox, as an injured driver or passenger in the other vehicle, would have access to only $100,000 in personal injury coverage. What we now have with this argument is because she's a passenger in a single car accident, she's entitled to the $100,000 in BI coverage she would have gotten if she was in the other car, plus a second tier of $100,000 in UIM coverage, which essentially constitutes a judicial rewriting of the policy. Lots of cases cited in my brief about this. You don't do that because that essentially converts the policy into a $200,000 liability policy for Mr. Loper. For Mr. Loper, yes. Did that answer your question, Judge?
Yes, thank
okay.
you.
He argues about hollow coverage, and I think there's a distinction in these other cases that I've cited that I'll rely on my brief for. It's not a hollow coverage because this is a different status of insured. She is insured because she is a passenger in the car. And the other cases from other jurisdictions make it clear that you have to look at that differently. She never paid premiums. There's no illusory coverage because she didn't pay premiums. And this is what Mr. Loper contracted for, and the insurer is providing what Mr. Loper contracted for. There is no windfall to American Family, and there's no illusory coverage as it pertains to the passenger. I agree with you. I think the amendment to the statute does nothing to address the right to write exclusions. And this exclusion has long been upheld as valid with public policy, which is why I rely so much on Terra Nova. Again, putting the cart before the horse, and the Terra Nova horse recognizes that the exclusion prohibits UIM coverage at the outset. The made whole doctrine, again, that argument I think is a little bit misleading because, again, yes, there is a legislative intent to make whole when there is coverage. The fundamental question here is, if the exclusion is valid, then there is no coverage, which dovetails nicely into my argument because after all of the briefing, after everything else, and it stunning to me how this happens. Sometimes we come to oral argument and we're able to get this down to the single dispositive question. And it's really pretty simple. If the General Assembly did not intend to prohibit the insured vehicle exclusion when it amended the statute in 2008, Terra Nova is still good law. It is binding on the district court, and it is binding here, and it is fully 100% dispositive. And that's where we start here. That is also consistent with the majority and better reason cases that the Colorado Supreme Court relies on in Terra Nova. It's consistent with the overwhelming majority of cases that the Illinois Court of Appeals cites in Mercury versus Kim. And I do want to talk about that a little bit, because three of those cases from other jurisdictions are cited by our Supreme Court in Terra Nova. And our Supreme Court doesn't go into a whole lot of detail as to the policy reasons behind allowing the insured vehicle exclusion. But in citing those three cases with approval, it at least implicitly recognizes those policy decisions as being valid in Colorado. The Louisiana case of Bro versus Geico, it's important to note that, I want to back up a little bit. One of the things about Terra Nova that is important to remember is that the reason the Supreme Court gave that decision is one of the reasons is because it said Colorado's statutory scheme on UM and UIM was not completely subsumed by the legislature. And specifically, it said it is a voluntary program that somebody can choose to enter into. It is not mandatory. Despite this overhaul in 2008, we still have a voluntary UM/UIM enrollment. We don't have to do that. And therefore, the fundamental predicate in Terra Nova that was important to the Supreme Court is the same right now, in that the legislature hasn't completely subsumed the responsibility for UM and UIM coverage. Moreover, while there may be some disagreement as to this, the language, the statutory language that was dispositive, the substantive statutory language that I think was dispositive in Terra Nova wasn't affected by the 2008 amendment. I recognize that part of the statute was amended by striking the issue with regard to stacking or not, but really that's more of a procedural amendment, because the substantive amendment was to the anti-stacking portion of the statute, and it's just to get it in harmony. The part that was substantive that was important to Terra Nova has been unchanged by the legislature. And I think with that preface, we can go in and talk about some of these cases. The Bro versus Geico Louisiana case is different. It involves a statute that's different than Colorado's, because there, unlike in Colorado, UM/UIM was mandatory for drivers, and it was a complete statement by the legislature of the responsibilities to obtain UM/UIM coverage. However, that did not prevent the Supreme Court in Louisiana from saying, but in common sense, consumers don't buy UIM to cover themselves. They don't buy UIM to cover the actions of their own drivers. People buy UIM, and the consumer expectation is to get UIM because there's a second separate vehicle other than the one that they're driving. And therefore, it upheld the exclusion, despite the mandatory nature of UIM coverage there. The Washington case of Miller versus Briggs was also cited in the Terra Nova case. And it points out three distinctions between the typical case where UM/UIM coverage is implicated and this kind of situation here. The passenger pays no premium, so the insurer does not get a windfall. Ms. Jacobs is not a party to this contract. Moreover, because the driver, Mr. Roper's insurer, has paid the policy limits, there is not the risk that the injured passenger is going to be completely without compensation. Indeed, it's stipulated she has received some compensation. And more fundamentally, the purpose of UIM in Colorado is to protect one's self. It is to award or to shield, if you will, somebody who has the foresight to buy their own insurance. That's what the Colorado mandate is, the mandate that we offer them. Miller versus Briggs recognized if somebody is smart enough to do that, Then, if they're injured like Ms. Jacobs is, they can go after their own insurance company. The policy in Colorado is we want to encourage people to do that so that, therefore, they can go after their own insurance. And the court, the district court here recognized, and American Families taking your position, Ms. Jacobs, if there is coverage and there's an implication that there is, she can go after her own insurer. In that regard, it's important to take a look at the other thing that the Miller court recognized, is that if you all of a sudden rewrite the contract so as to effectively double the liability coverage, you're going to be actually contravening the legislative intent, because now all of a sudden you have a second tier of liability coverage that has to go into underwriting. That was relied upon as among the better reasoned cases by the court in Terranova. Finally, the Minnesota case of Myers versus State Farm was also cited by Terranova. In that, essentially, the Minnesota court recognized there what Ms. Jacobs is trying to do here, which is we're not going to rewrite UIM into a second tier of liability coverage. I cited numerous other cases.
Counsel, let me ask you this. So summarize for me then, what is the purpose of the 2008 amendments if not to address or overrule the Terranova decision?
It is, first of all, it is not to overrule Terranova and do away with the exclusion. The purpose is where, assuming Ms. Jacobs had UIM coverage, assuming the existence of UIM coverage, the purpose is to say that the UIM carrier is no longer entitled to set off the payments from the liability carrier, from anybody else, up to the point of compensation of the injured plaintiff. And American Family is not taking the position that doesn't exist. But the issue is where there is coverage. In summary, American Family says the exclusion is still valid. Insurers are entitled to write exclusions. Exclusions are appropriate for purposes of underwriting. And nothing about the amendment prohibits this exclusion, which has long been held valid. Thank you.
Mr. Fowler, you have about 3:42 left.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. The issue is whether American Family can dilute, condition, or limit the underinsured motorist coverage that's required under Section 609 as it existed at the time of this accident, 2008. The entire argument about Terranova, this other case law, is a distraction. Terranova did not address the statutory scheme, the UIM system as it exists today. They're trying to take you back 22 years and argue just because the Supreme Court upheld an exclusion with the name that happens to be dealing with insured vehicles, that the legislature can't make a drastic change and enhance and broaden and deepen UIM coverage to protect the public. Terranova does not apply. The facts are different. The statutory scheme is different. It's not binding precedent if the underlying statutory scheme has been radically rewritten to provide real and meaningful coverage to the public. People should get what they pay for. They talk about premium. The premium for the UIM component in this policy and the premium for the liability component are separate. The coverages are separate. The coverages operate separately. There's even a provision in the policy I pointed out in the reply brief with the appropriate record site that even the underinsured motorist coverage applies separately from the uninsured motorist coverage. So even those operate separately. Mr. Loper paid the premium to protect his occupants. That's why I started with the facts that Mr. Loper's policy states explicitly that it covers occupants. That bridge has been covered. This argument that it doesn't apply because there are two separate vehicles doesn't matter. His policy says it covers occupants. Ms. Jacobs was an occupant. That's more than a red herring. The policy covers Ms. Jacobs as an occupant. Mr. Loper paid the premium. That means something. He paid a premium for uninsured and uninsured motorist coverage, a separate premium for liability. Let me give a quick example. Judge Hoffman is exhausted. He's written too many published opinions that week. He read one of my briefs that put him to sleep. He was driving to the judicial conference with Judge Roman. You knock off, you roll the vehicle, you hurt Judge Roman. You have $100,000 liability coverage you paid for. You have $100,000 in UIM you paid for. Judge Roman's injuries are greater than $100,000. You paid the premium, you have the benefit of the liability, so the American Family should indemnify you for the $100,000. Great. But Judge Roman's injuries are greater than $100,000. His might be $250,000 in injuries. But he's an occupant. He's a lawful occupant in your vehicle, Judge. And you paid the premium to cover occupants because they're likely your friends and people you know. The policy provides the coverage for occupants. The statute says you should have coverage because he's using the vehicle. All the case law says an occupant's using the vehicle. The Riddell case, Amicus pointed that out, I pointed that out in briefs. Therefore, you should get the benefit. Mr. Loper should get the benefit of his UIM premium, and Judge Hoffman should get the benefit of what you paid for your UIM premium. So this needs two cars, doesn't work. It doesn't void the coverage. You cannot apply the plain text of the amendments in 2008 and let American Family not pay for the coverage that the statute requires explicitly and operationally. My time's up.
Thank you, counsel. And we thank both counsel for your helpful arguments. This matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. Thank you.